Welcome to Chosen Generation with your host, Pastor Greg Young.
But you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people, that you should shew forth the praises of Him who has called you out of darkness into His marvelous light, which in time past were not a people, but are now the people of God, which had not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy.
And now, Chosen Generation, where no topic is off limits and everything is filtered through biblical glasses. And now, here's your host, Pastor Greg.
And welcome to Chosen Generation. Thank you so much for tuning in. I so appreciate you choosing to listen to Chosen Generation here on KERV 1230 AM. Of course, you can get us online, KERV1230.com, KERV1230.com, and at the website, PastorGregYoung.org, PastorGregYoung.org. Got a great program lined up for you today. We're going to start things off by talking about a pretty serious subject. We're going to talk about the suicide of Robin Williams and just about suicide and depression in general. Second segment will be Brandon Darby, the managing director of Breitbart, Texas, with some more insight on what's really happening at our border. Michael Dozier joins me with Project 21 Black Leadership Network to talk about what's happening in Ferguson, Missouri. And we'll be closing the program out with Rabbi Ari Spiro, who's going to talk about what's happening with ISIS and the intent of radical Islam. So we want to start out, though, with Dr. Carl Benzio, and want to welcome him back to the program. Carl, welcome back to the show.
Hey, great to be with you, Pastor Greg, and your listeners. Hopefully we can help those who might be experiencing storms with this situation with Robin Williams.
Absolutely, without question. You know, it's a very serious, it's a serious subject. Robin Williams was suffering from depression, indications of bipolar disorder, and then Parkinson's disease. And that's what we want to do. How can we help someone to cope? Is it as someone has suggested? And there's been a lot of news on this, Carl, about, well, it's a selfish act. It's an act of cowardice. But there's some real dangers that are associated with depression. And what are some of the signs of, you know, clinical depression as opposed to just having maybe, you know, a downturn in how you're feeling?
Yeah, you know, that's you know, depression is pretty significant. A lot of people struggle with it. You know, at any one time, about 18% of our population in their lifetime will get what we call clinical depression, sort of that medical depression, including postpartum depression, bipolar. About 24% in their lifetime will have it. And that's just major depression. There's minor depression, which is less than 2 weeks having significant symptoms that I'll describe in a minute. But, you know, it's the World Health Organization has said that depression is the most significant cause of disability in the world. So it's something that a lot of people struggle with, but often struggle in shame and silence just because of the stigma or the fear or the thought of I'm weak or I don't have enough faith. And, you know, sadness is, you know, we see in the Bible that God was sad. You know, when his people turned away from him, he's sad. Jesus wept when heard that Lazarus, you know, died. So sadness itself isn't a sin. It isn't a bad thing, or God or Jesus wouldn't have had them. So sadness, you know, from a psychological perspective, is that natural reaction that we have, that warning system that God's given us to let us know that something's not right, that something's wrong, or there's potential danger. You know, if we see we're in the woods and we see a tiger, we should be afraid, worried, depressed. That's going to let us know, hey, there's something wrong here. There's something potentially dangerous. So sadness is that temporary warning sign that lets us know something's not going right, but it doesn't interfere with our thinking. We're able to think. We're able to enjoy other situations in our lives. We're able to function still pretty well. What depression is whenever it goes past that just warning sign, that something that's more pervasive, you know, in our thought world and in our emotions, it, from a clinical standpoint, it lasts more than 2 weeks, and it really starts to impair our functioning. So whether it's our relationships, marriage, kids, whether it's our work performance, whether it's our ability to enjoy things, it really starts to impact several areas of our life so that we're not thinking clearly, we're not functioning well, and it's become disruptive. So for some people, it impacts their appetite. They either eat more or eat less. Sleeping is increased or interfered with. energy level. And then those emotional feelings of guilt, hopelessness, helplessness, suicidal thoughts, not being able to enjoy things, whether enjoying work, enjoying relationships, hobbies, sports, those kind of things. It really is, it's almost like Pigpen had that dirt cloud that followed him around in Charlie Brown. Mm-hmm. Having depression is like having a storm cloud around your head, and everything seems doom and gloom. So, you know, some people say it was a selfish act when somebody commits suicide. You know, there certainly is aspects of sort of being me-centered, but it comes from just feeling so much pain. And that I think if a person was given an option, having the pain to end and live versus having the pain to end and die, they would certainly choose having the pain to end and live. But they just don't see that as an option. They've tried many ways usually to try to get rid of that pain, and it hasn't worked. So they're going to choose the last option that they feel is available to them, have the pain end. But unfortunately, that involves dying. They often feel that everybody would be better off without me. So they don't really see it as a selfish act. They see it as I'm helping my family by getting rid of that burden that I am to them.
Well, I'm glad that you mentioned that point, because I think that that has, you know, from people that I've counseled, from some of my own experiences, the overwhelming sense that the burden, not just the personal sense of pain or loss or just overwhelming, I don't know, sadness, I suppose, hopelessness, but the sense that the change in personality, change in makeup, change in who you are is so much of a burden for those around you that at a point it seems as though their lives would be better if you didn't exist, which is a lie from the pit of hell. It is an absolute lie, but it is something that is very real to someone who's in that place, I think.
Definitely. I mean, as you know, as I've treated patients that have had suicidal thoughts, that's one of their big concerns, is I've become a burden to my spouse or a burden to my kids. Mm-hmm. The hardest person I have to treat is probably the person that's been sexually abused by a parent. But the second hardest situation is a child whose parent committed suicide. Even if that suicide happened mm-hmm. when the child was 40 years old, mm-hmm. you know, obviously whenever they're younger, it's more impactful. But that child lives with the idea that if I was just a better child, my parent wouldn't have killed themselves. Whenever, like you said, as you talk to the parent, that's, you know, they feel that they're the burden on the child. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, they actually leave their child with a huger burden whenever they commit suicide, and leave the child with that guilt and that unknown of, if I would have just been better, if I would have just got an A on that test, if I wouldn't have smoked pot, if I would have.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and I've shared this before, my dad attempted suicide at 68.
Mm-hmm.
And so I understand it from that perspective. And when I became very, very ill 10 years ago and was given 3 to 6 months to live, one of the benefits that I received was I think it's called the myelin sheath, but the mm-hmm. my myelin sheath is deteriorated.
Mm-hmm.
And so because of that, of course, that affects, you know, issues of depression, because it impacts how the neurons hit. So my myelin sheath is permanently damaged. Mm. And one of the things that I've noticed in the midst of this too is that oftentimes we talk about the physiological aspect of it, the chemical imbalances and the neurons and things not meshing and not hitting right, and it's not always constant. There's times when things seem to be firing well and times when things can be not firing good, I think, for someone that's dealing with this. But there's a really severe spiritual aspect. And I think a lot of times when we, and I know that in your therapy that you deal with three different areas. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we want to talk about the three different areas that you focus on and that folks need to be aware of if they're dealing with this themselves or if they're dealing with this with someone that they love. And we're going to take a very quick break. We'll be right back after these messages. You're listening to The Chosen Generation, where no topic is off limits and everything is filtered through biblical glasses.
Hey, Tim, I got a table over here.
Oh, great. Hey, how you been?
Good, but my car has really been running rough lately, and I know I need a new set of brakes. Say, do you know of a good, honest repair shop? Money's kind of tight. The dealer's just too expensive, and I can't afford to get burned.
Well, when I bought my first car, my family told me to go to Central Automotive. They'd used other places, but none compared. I haven't been anywhere else since. Central Automotive always has provided honest and dependable service, and I love their knowledge and professionalism. That's where I'd go.
Central Automotive. Are you tired of being run over by aggressive sales tactics at another facility? For over 20 years, Central Automotive has continued our commitment to deliver high-quality service and repair, and our capability continues to expand, now offering tire sales and service. Endorsed by AAA, Angie's List, and the Better Business Bureau, who better to trust with your ride?
Central Automotive. Problem solved. CentralAutoRepair.net.
Here's Twyla Brace, president of CCHF, with today's Health Freedom Minute.
The federal government is sending letters to those whose citizenship and immigration status or their income eligibility is in question. The administration says the 310,000 people who have not responded to calls, letters, and emails asking for data will lose their Obamacare coverage at the end of September unless they respond by September 5th. Almost half of the enrollees with questionable citizenship are from Florida and Texas. Obamacare allows only lawfully present immigrants to buy Obamacare coverage. The administration is pursuing those who enrolled on the federal exchange. State exchanges are handling these kind of cases on their own.
Learn more about protecting your health care choices. Sign up for the CCHF Weekly E-News Update at cchfreedom.org. That's cchfreedom.org.
We return now to Chosen Generation with your host, Pastor Greg.
And welcome back to Chosen Generation, where no topic is off limits and everything filtered through biblical glasses. And we're talking about Robin Williams. We're talking about the depression. We're talking about suicidal tendencies, bipolar disorder, things of that nature. And folks, this is such an important topic. You know, I read a study that 75% of the population will be impacted. Dr. Benzio was telling me when we were off air that if you include minor depressions and all forms of that, literally 98% of the population will be touched by this issue at some point in their lives. That's nearly all of us, folks, that will deal with this, whether it's, you know, loss of a job, loss of a home, loss of a loved one, physical, some kind of severe physical illness that affects either us personally or someone that we are now offering care to. All of those things can play a role in leading to this. Now, there's three different areas, Carl, that you guys at Lighthouse Ministries deal with, and I want to make sure we give this. Give the phone number. If there's someone who is in a crossroads right now listening to this program, and you've had some feelings of just, you know, I want to give up, I feel hopeless, I'm just in a dark place, what's a number they can call?
Yes, you know, for the listeners, if you're struggling or if you have a loved one who's struggling with any kind of behavioral health issue, depression, severe anxiety, or certainly addictions, our helpline number is 844-LIFE-CHANGE, 844-LIFE-CHANGE, life change. We want to help you change your life, and we have the resources and we have the connections with different treatment options that will help you get back on track and get out of the storm in your life and back into the calm seas of living.
Super. All right. The three areas. Well, you know what? We didn't give that definition. Give us the definition real quick. I don't think we quite got to that. The definition, or did you do that? Did we give the definition of depression per se? I guess we kind of did.
Yeah, depression is sort of that ongoing, you know, more than 2 weeks of having certain symptoms. You know, some of the causes of depression, sometimes it's just medical, like you were talking about your myelin sheath, you know, and Robin Williams, you know, it comes out now that he had Parkinson's probably. So Parkinson's, Lyme's disease, cancer, certain medications. So there's medical causes for depression and behavioral health issues. Then more common than that, there was medical psychological, like a postpartum depression or when people have heart disease or breathing issues and they don't get enough oxygen to their brain. But the most common form is whenever we have psychological and spiritual issues. So God designed us spirit, mind, and body. You know, we have these three spheres, and these three spheres are very intricately, interwoven. But we have to look at all three spheres when we both look at the cause of these issues like depression or addictions or anxiety, but also when we look at the treatment. And, you know, to me, in my personal life, as a person who struggled with depression and alcoholism, as well as I treat people and put together programs, you know, the final step of our daily functioning and decision-making is one chemical in our brain hits another chemical. So that's the final step. But what influences our brain chemistry, or that hardware, you know, if you think of it as a computer, you know, that hardware is that brain chemistry and the biology. What influences that biology is our decision-making. So when we make good decisions, our mind is renewed, as the Bible says. When we make poor decisions, our brain chemistry, our biology, our brain is injured. You know, the hardware is starting to break and crack. Mm-hmm. So that operating system for the computer is the mind. And that's why so much of the Bible talks about how to be diligent, how to be on guard, how to guard our mind, our heart. Jesus talks about decision-making. All of his parables are about how can we be a better decision-maker. The Proverbs, Paul, Peter, James, they talk about decision-making, because that brain chemistry, you know, that as we make decisions, that wires our brain differently. Mm-hmm. But what influences our decision-making process is the spiritual truths. So what we believe in, you know, do we make God the Lord of our life, and then do we accept his instruction, or are we always trying to write our own instruction manual? You know, for me, my main difficulties in life, and I landed in jail because I was using the book According to Carl to manage my life, to make decisions, to determine what's important. You know, Robin Williams, they said he had everything. Well, maybe materially, but not psychologically or spiritually. We all have wounds. We all have baggage. We all have, like you talk about, biblical glasses. We all have distorted glasses that we see our life through. And so we have distortions. And so as we apply those biblical truths, that spiritual instruction, that then modifies our decision-making, hopefully, so that we make better decisions. And as we make better decisions, that alters our brain chemistry. So going from that addicted brain to or depressed brain to a healthy brain, or renewing the mind. And so many treatment programs only look at maybe the biological, or only maybe look at the psychological, and very rarely look at the spiritual. Mm-hmm. Or if they do, it's in a very superficial or in a 12-step oriented way, as opposed to really looking at the biblical and then bringing in that divine power of the Holy Spirit to help us with discernment, to help us with power to really make that right decision. Even though we know it's right, sometimes we sort of choke and make a wrong decision. The Holy Spirit can guide us and empower us in making good decisions. That's going to rewire our mind, and that's where lasting transformation is going to come from.
In my experience, too, you know, I've been exposed to Neil Anderson's Bondage Breakers. I'm sure you're probably familiar with that. I've been exposed to Deliverance Ministry, which I think has a very powerful place even for believers, and I've talked about that on the program before. But we are, you know, we do wrestle not against flesh and blood, but principalities and powers and wickedness in heavenly places. And we have to recognize that there is an enemy out there who absolutely hates us and wants to see us destroyed. And I've also had some exposure to Ed Smith's Theophostic Ministry. I don't know if you're familiar with that at all.
Yeah, somewhat, sure.
You know, but again, you know, each of these are not, I don't think there's a one fix all. You know what I'm saying? It's there.
Well, in all those other, not all those, but in some of those, you know, Deliverance and the Theophostic, it was more of an acute, you know, claim it and pray for it kind of thing. You know, identify it and let's confess it and it's resolved. And what I've noticed in people's lives is that certainly is an important step of recognition, but it's really that ongoing, going from milk to solid food. And you know, like you say, those glasses, you know, those smudges don't come off immediately and we have totally clean glasses. It's usually a process of, you know, how do I start to, you know, just like math. I mean, I just can't go into math and know all of math the first day. You know, I start with little bites and little chunks of taking in Bible doctrine, practicing it, applying it. It's a little awkward. I'm not quite fluid with it. But as I continue to apply it, as I continue to have faith in it, you know, just like we see Peter, you know, through his course of, you know, trying things, walking on water, then having doubt and sinking and, you know, cutting off an ear, but then denying Christ. And we just sort of see him in this process of really getting clearer glasses and clearer glasses as he continues to mature. I think for all of us, it's really that process. Even though we're new creations at the point of salvation, it's a lot of growth and practicing that we need to do. And so we have to really decide, are we going to practice the right things over and over? Are we going to continue to, you know, conform to the world and practice the old ways and not strip off the old self, but continue to wear the old self and wear those lenses of the old self on a regular basis? And that's where certain certainly Satan wants us, you know, to be in that contaminated world chasing, you know, like Solomon did, you know, chasing peace and joy and all the things of this world and not really looking to God and God's solutions for that depression, that anxiety, insecurity, incompetence that we all struggle with.
Well, and I think the benefits of these other aspects are that you begin to negate some of the internal turmoil that is going on so that you're better able to do exactly what you're saying, which is apply the right kind of thought processes and so forth by having a very clear mind to be able to accomplish some of that. It doesn't mean that you don't have to work at it. It doesn't mean that it doesn't, you know, go away per se, but at least instead of fighting so much turmoil inside your own head, you're now seeing it coming at you, so to speak, and at least within your own fort, there's a sense that everybody's on the same side.
Well, as you mentioned, we're in a war.
Yes.
And we know the enemy has an incredible strategy. I mean, he's been studying us for, you know, millennia, and he has an incredible strategy. So we just can't go out and be random and expect to win.
Yeah.
So God's given us instruction. He's given us weapons, you know, spiritually powerful weapons, and he's given us armor. But if we don't strategically identify, you know, those areas that we struggle and put on the armor and have some strategy to fight back, and if we just go out randomly each day, well, we're going to get slaughtered and wonder at the end of the day, well, boy, why did I get so beaten up today? But unfortunately, a lot of times we go into the day, maybe we have our devotions in the morning and we feel we're ready, but then we start in our default mode of randomness and we start to get beat up little by little through the course of the day. So it's being able to, you know, as you say, identify those situations, but then, you know, let's start to put together a strategy that I can comfortably and readily use on a daily basis and get stronger and stronger in that strategy so I can become victorious and actually be on the attack, you know, instead of always sort of be on the defensive with Satan.
Well, without question, without question. You know, as we come to our close, you know, of course, and you kind of briefly touched on it, but one of the things that folks think of is this idea of self-medicating, whether it's through money, you know, the pursuit of money, the pursuit of status and success, or it can end up into an addictive situation, but it's a matter of self-medication. And that's really one of the patterns you have to break.
Yeah, all addictions are really a coping skill that, you know, try to relieve the pain and bring us comfort. We're all addicted to comfort. We want comfort. It's amazing what we'll do, you know, to have comfort. So whether it's a substance to overtly self-medicate or whether it's what we call a process addiction like gambling, sex, adulation, workaholism, you know, those kind of behaviors. And social media now is a big addiction for people to escape the stressors of their life. And whenever we're looking at those coping mechanisms, we're leaving out God. And so only God really has the answers and really has the peace and the joy that we're striving for. And so as we look, we really need to look to him just like Solomon, you know, looked at everything under the sun, and he couldn't find it. He had way more money and way more opportunity than we do, and he couldn't find it outside of God. There isn't anything outside of God. You know, we really need to look at him. But Satan is going to put up, you know, many imposters, you know, to grab our attention and to look for the quick fix. And sometimes we're sort of lazy and we sort of gravitate to shortcuts and quick fixes as opposed to, you know, implementing God's instruction and God's path to peace.
Without question. Without question. Dr. Carl, thank you again. Give us the phone number and a website, please.
Yeah, if you're struggling, lighthousenetwork.org. We have many different resources, daily devotional and videos there that you can look at. But if you're really struggling now and need some acute help, we can get you a residential situation today or we can find you a therapist today. 844-LIFE-CHANGE. 844-LIFE-CHANGE. There's no reason to suffer in silence like many people do. There's help available. Reach out and get it.
Thank you, Dr. Carl. Appreciate it. Folks, we're going to take a break. We'll be back with Brandon Darby on the other side. And you're listening to The Chosen Generation, where no topic is off limits and everything filtered through biblical glasses.
Major League Baseball is just heating up and NFL camps are getting ready to start. With the only DirecTV hookup in Kerrville, Wing King has you covered for all the action. Wing King's located at 810 Sydney Baker Street, open Monday through Saturday from 11 a.m. to 10 p.m. and noon to 10 p.m. on Sundays. Wing King has fresh wings, never frozen, and if you're looking for a burger, Wing King has it. They have sandwiches and salad too, a little something for every member of the family. They do takeout too, so make it a Wing King day today and tell them Pastor Greg sent you.
All
The 2013 tax season has come to a close, but it is not too early to think about 2014. And Gregory R. Seibert, CPA, is the answer. 2014 has brought with it a whole new list of tax laws, so don't get caught unprepared. Greg has been providing tax services for over 25 years. He does both personal and business tax returns, business audits, nonprofits, and if you have an IRS issue or think you might, Greg is the expert you need on your side. Did you have to file an extension? Greg can help with that. Making plans for retirement or selling your business? Greg has the tax strategies to help you. The initial consultation is free, and Greg will give you an honest perspective on what you should do. No hard sells and none of this trying to charge you for what you do not need. If you can do it yourself, Greg will let you know. So give Greg a call today and get the advice you need. Gregory R. Seibert, CPA, professional integrity that cares about you. 830-257-5900, 830-257-5900. Are you ready to see your garden flourish? Are you tired of working hard and getting little to no return? Thousands spent with poor results? Super Soil Booster is the answer. This all-natural soil healer will give you a greater harvest and make gardening fun again. Super Soil Booster is pure science, not hype. Now is the time to use Super Soil Booster. Get yours today at Kerrville Health Food or Next Generation Produce. For more information, go to supersoilbooster.com. That's supersoilbooster.com. What are you waiting for? Your new garden is calling you.
This is Adam Mundall with State Air. We need people on radio willing to speak about the Bible, the Constitution, and putting God back in our nation again. So join me in sponsoring Chosen Generation and Pastor Greg. Call him today at 830-446-3624. That's 830-446-3624. This has blessed my business and it will bless yours.
Turn now to Chosen Generation with your host, Pastor Greg.
And welcome back to Chosen Generation, where no topic is off limits and everything filtered through biblical glasses. And listen, folks, if you're suffering from any kind of depression or issues of that nature, please make that phone call today, will you? 844-LIFE-CHANGE, 844-LIFE-CHANGE. Dr. Carl Benzio and his staff are ready, willing, and able to connect you, talk with you. If you have concerns about someone in your life that may be dealing with addiction in any way, shape, or form, or depression, you know, look for the signs. If you see something, you can call them. It's all confidential. And just visit with them. Develop a strategy. Again, that number, 844-LIFE-CHANGE. Well, I'm joined right now by just a good friend, a good brother. We've known each other now for a couple of years, and it's just an honor to have him on the program. He is the kind of guy that sees a situation and says, how can I make an impact, and then goes and does it. And has really been a trailblazer that, you know, kind of created the whole Breitbart Texas move. And I want to welcome my friend Brandon Darby to the program. Brandon, thank you so much for being here, my friend.
Hey, Greg. Thanks for having me on.
It's really a pleasure. And I appreciate you. I want you to know that very much.
Well, thank you, Greg. I appreciate you as well. I enjoy being on your show. I enjoy that we can talk about a variety of issues. You know, a lot of the interviews I do, obviously they're, you know, 6-minute quick hits, or, you know, in the industry or in the field, there's a lot of that. We can basically make one or two comments on an issue, and there's having a space where people can talk about an issue more deeply is definitely needed right now. I think it's needed in radio, and I think it's needed in television.
Well, I appreciate that. We sure try to accomplish that here. Brandon, when we talked last time, you were sharing with us, you know, some of the fallacy that's associated with the thought that we have shut the border down. I think you mentioned something to the effect that 1/25th of the border is really where all this focus is going. Obviously, that's a very, very small part of the problem.
There were a couple of things that I wanted to ask you about. One of them, there's an act called the Humane Act that's been being put forth by Senators Cuellar and Cornyn that's supposed to change the status of the Central American and South Americans from where they are now to similar to what's happening with Mexico and Canada. But my perspective on this, and maybe I'm wrong and that's why I'm asking you, is that we still, even by bringing something like that forward, are not doing what we need to do to discourage this issue to begin with. Am I off base with that thought?
I think maybe a little bit. I think, you know, at first when with Cornyn and Cuellar, I wasn't a fan of Cuellar until, strangely enough, until I actually, when I started going to Laredo a lot, which is his area, the Border Patrol guys liked this guy, you know? And the Border Patrol guys are mostly conservative. And I was like, well, this is weird. You know, this is strange. And so it turns out that it's just one of those anomalies where there's a Democrat, Cuellar, who actually cares about, or, you know, gives a voice to the guys, the men and women of Border Patrol. So I started to look at that. Then I had some criticisms of Cornyn. There's some things I like about Cornyn, and there's some things that I definitely don't, you know, mm-hmm. about his approach. There's a lot. In fact, we could go there, but
I'm fine with that. Either way, here.
Okay, well, Cornyn's a tricky character because, yes. I mean, he's obviously a good person. You know, he's not a corrupted guy. I think he's a sincere person, but he tends to, on some of the issues that I care most about, he has more moderate views, or views that I think that in context with what's going on, the extremes on the left, I don't think they're great, you know?
Right.
And that's just a, there's really no way around that, you know, like saying that he doesn't. Some would say, well, hey, he has, you know, a high percentile conservative record on his votes. And I'm like, well, if you look at the votes per vote, of course he has a very high record. I'm not saying the guy is a liberal, you know, at all. But for the, out of the 90 votes he voted conservative on, that's awesome. Out of the 10 votes he didn't, yes, it's only, 90 to 10, but those 10 votes had a greater impact, in my opinion, you know.
They were more significant, they were more significant bills.
More significant votes. Mm-hmm. Right. And so, you know, and over time I've gotten those people on the staff, and especially just from reporting and stuff, and I'm convinced that the guy's a very sincere person who's doing what he thinks is right, you know? And I'm okay with that. You know, I'm okay with that. So I look at this situation with he and Cuellar, and I think, you know, I think a first step in the road is making sure that there is no, that the contiguous nations, you know, the fact that people can be immediately deported from contiguous nations but not non-contiguous nations, we need to make sure people can be immediately deported from contiguous nations, from non-contiguous nations as well. And I think that's what their proposal goes to the heart of. The problem is it doesn't, I don't believe it addresses the adult. And I don't believe that it does. But this is the catch, is we have to remember where a lot of our immigration laws about non-contiguous nations and stuff. You have to remember, you know, I was very shocked when I went to D.C. and I went to the Holocaust Memorial, right?
Okay.
And you start on I think it's the third floor. You start at the top, right? You go in, you start at the top, and then you work your way down. And as you work your way down, it's impossible to leave there and not just have a big knot in your stomach and in your throat, you know, of upsetness. But you learn about the numbers of people who came from Germany, the numbers of Jewish people, and how they set out and then they were turned around, you know, because we really didn't have we didn't accept them. And a lot of nations on the world didn't accept them at first. And so a lot of these measures that they're drawn from, a lot of these measures kind of stem from that, like an effort to make sure that kind of thing never happens again, you know. So this is where we start to get really tricky, you know, into tricky waters, I think. The very tricky waters. It's a complex conversation. It's not one that's so simple. Like, we just wrote about the federal government giving some exemption to people from Liberia and other other nations that are having an Ebola outbreak. They basically just allowed some to stay who were here, who were in the process of immigration hearings. And on one hand, you're like, hey, you're just exploiting it. Well, because it fits into this larger context, right? But on the other hand, you're like, well, I can see if we weren't in the middle of this big fight and we weren't being exploited so badly, I can see the benefits of something like that if it existed in a vacuum, you know? And so it's a very complex conversation.
I follow what you're saying. In other words, it's one of those situations, Brandon, where there are some good reasons to consider it, but then there are some very negative reasons as well in the context of the situation that we find ourselves in.
Well, yeah, but that's what I mean. It's if we weren't in the middle of a massive fight where we have every logical reason to believe that our administration and or the Obama administration and his allies are attempting to completely change the demographics of our nation by allowing hundreds of thousands of people to illegally come in and then vote for them. If we weren't in the middle of that, I can comprehend why, you know, if somebody comes from Iran and they get here, why you would say, hey, and they turn themselves in, that is, why you would say, hey, let's take a look at your situation. Wow, you're a Christian in Iran, or wow, you're a Christian in Iraq. Or I understand that, you know, but part of the problem, too, is that these same rules that are getting applied to, the same benefits that are getting applied to people who come here and try to turn themselves in and say, hey, I need help. A lot of the people who come here and try to sneak in, and then once they realize they're caught, you know, they say, hey, I'm a victim or I'm this. They're getting a lot of the same treatment, you know. So we have, obviously that's not safe either. So you know, I think any measure to address these issues, you know, let's keep in mind that for years no one even tried to address these issues.
Yeah.
No one even wanted to talk about it. So anything keeping it in the minds of people that I think is healthy, even though it might not be exactly what I would do, you know.
And I want to speak to that for just a second, Brandon, because, you know, for my listeners, if you go to my website, PastorGregYoung.org, and you go back, gosh, was it the beginning of this year or the end of last year, Brandon, when you came on the program, and we had a very in-depth conversation about what was happening at the border and the dangers of what was going on and some changes that had taken place in the 60s, in policies down there regarding work permits and different things of that nature, that really created, you know, the beginnings of a lot of this issue. But if you go back, folks, and listen to that, Brandon and I talked about this subject and about the potential for a very serious problem way back then.
Oh, I wrote a piece last August.
That was
a year ago. I wrote a piece last August, and it was called Liberals Exploiting Human Trafficking Aid. And it was all about how what I was beginning to see as someone who had worked undercover in efforts to stop human trafficking and human smuggling and sex trafficking of minors, and what I had seen with people who were victims of this and trying to help them, I began to see a shift, a sea change, where not only were the people who were really victims approaching me and their advocates, but the majority of the people who began approaching me were actually people who were left-of-center immigration attorneys who were trying to get me to help them portray their client as one as able to accept this help and this aid, as fitting for this aid, as somehow eligible for this aid. And I saw that and I said, uh-oh, this is a problem. You know, this is going to be a problem.
Yeah.
And sure enough, it was in October when actually, I guess it in theory really began heavily, the massive waves. But sure enough, I was cracked. And that's just what I was seeing. I mean, obviously I didn't realize the extent that it would happen, but I was beginning to see that on the ground. And, I was beginning to see that happening. And I wrote about it, and people were very mad at me when I wrote about it. A lot of people who work with human trafficking victims were mad at me, and you know, that damaged some relationships, but I wrote the truth and I wrote what I saw. And it turns out I was right. You know, that's indeed what has happened. Yeah. We have these laws that we set up, and I think, you know, the majority of people who write them, people say, Obama wrote this to do this, and he may or may not have, but I think the majority of people who supported him probably thought, hey, let's support human trafficking victims and let's make sure that we're helping. And it gets exploited. You know, that's the problem we face, is everything gets exploited. We forget that, same thing with entitlement. You know, we forget that there are people who legitimately need entitlement, and then there are probably more people who legitimately do not and are going to find a way to take them anyways.
Without question. Well, and you know, that goes to the issues of arbitrary law versus rule of law, and the fact that people are going to continue to try to push the envelope until they're stopped. And when you have an administration and the resident who continues to violate rule of law consistently, you know, that's your example, and that's the side that he's leading. We're going to take a very quick break. We'll be right back. My guest is Brandon Darby, Breitbart, Texas, managing editor and managing director, I should say. And we're talking about the border issue. If you've got a question for Brandon on this subject, you can hit me at the website, PastorGregYoung.org, PastorGregYoung.org. Just go to the contact page, shoot that question over real quick, and we'll try and get it answered for you here in this next segment. We'll be right back.
Hey, honey.
Hi, honey. Take off your shoes and socks and put this on.
A blindfold?
Yep.
Okay.
Now take my hand.
Wow, honey, this new carpet feels amazing.
Take off the blindfold.
Wait a minute, this is the old carpet, but it feels like new. What did you do?
I went to Powell Vacuum and bought a new Maytag vacuum. The motor has a dual intake system, a 5-year bumper-to-bumper warranty, and it's American-made. So I saved money with Powell's 10% discount on American-made products. Plus, it's a Maytag, known for dependability. And with the money we save, we can finally take that hunting trip you've been trying to save for.
Powell Vacuum has opened a store right here in Kerrville to serve the Hill Country. Located between Aaron's and Schlotsky's on Sydney Baker, they're open 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday and Saturdays from 9 to 4. The experts at Powell take the time to hear your needs and concerns. They have a best price guarantee on most brands they carry. And if you need your current vacuum serviced, their service department is top notch. In-store financing is available, and they also carry refurbished vacuums. Warranty work is done on site for your convenience. So head in or call today. Powell Vacuum, 830-896-8222. 830-896-8222.
The moon, helping sustain life. This is Ken Ham, a missionary to our evolutionized culture and the church. Yesterday, we learned that the moon's unusual size and orbit help make life possible on Earth. But there's more. You see, the moon also makes modern science possible. I'll explain. The sun is 400 times larger than the moon, and it's also 400 times farther away. Now, this unique situation means the sun and the moon appear to be the same size in the sky. And as a result, when a total eclipse of the sun occurs, it allows astronomers to study certain parts of God's creation, including gravity. It's because of the moon and eclipse that Sir Isaac Newton came up with his theory of gravity. The moon points to the wonder of our Creator, Jesus Christ.
Want to know the true history of the universe? You'll find out when you visit our faith-affirming website. You'll be encouraged at answersingenesis.org.
This is Adam Mundall with State Air, and we are sponsors of Chosen Generation and Pastor Greg. Sponsoring this program has been a real blessing to our business, and I want to encourage you to join me in sponsoring Chosen Generation and Pastor Greg. Call him today at 830-446-3624. Once again, that's 830-446-3624. I know your business will be blessed as ours is, and I challenge you to this blessing. Thank you.
Now, back to Chosen Generation with your host, Pastor Greg.
And welcome back to Chosen Generation, where no topic is off limits and everything is filtered through biblical glasses. And let's see here. Okay. All right. No questions as of yet. Again, if you want to send a question in, you can go to PastorGregYoung.org, PastorGregYoung.org, and shoot a message over on contact. Or if you have my email, DoseGhostMan@gmail.com, DoseGhostMan@gmail.com, hit me with your question, and we'll ask Brandon. You know, I'm... As I just mentioned to you, and we don't have to go into all of that, but you know, I have some real serious concerns about Senator Cornyn and about you know, some of the things that he's done. I had some serious concerns about Senator Cuellar. I'm surprised to hear what you said. I guess I'm happy to hear about it, and I feel bad because, you know, you've covered extensively what's happened on the other side of the border as well. You've gone in, you've gotten some folks to talk to you. You've talked about the cartel's influence, the monetary influence on politicians in Mexico and so forth. And, you know, when you are the political representative over a region that seems to be now being run. Well, let me ask that question. How much influence do you think the cartels have in Laredo?
I think they have great. Well, that's another question. I think they have great influence in Laredo, and I don't think it's so simple as like a guy from a cartel with a mask on comes over and hands money to politicians. But I think through business and through funding, I think they have a ton of influence. You know, a lot.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I've heard rumors about different political leaders and. But no one's been able to really substantiate them. But for low-level political leaders, we've steady written about those issues, steady written about people taking bribes, taking money from drug lords, looking the other way, getting caught looking the other way. And so, yeah, there's a massive problem there. All I would say with Cuellar is I don't think that being able to immediately repatriate and send people away. I don't think that's helpful to cartels. You know, cartels. It's not helpful to them if they're. You know, if you look at how the situation is structured and what they do, is it's actually a form of residual income for cartels. It's not like they get paid and they drop people off and then every time that the people, if we support them, they're just going to come back and pay again.
Right.
You know, it doesn't work that way. What happens is they usually come up with a little bit of money. The cartels bring them with the commitment that they will continue to pay money once they're in the U.S. So, and pay off the rest of the debt. So if people get deported immediately, they can never pay that money, and the cartels lose a lot of money. So it's not helpful to the cartels that we deport the people who come from non-contiguous nations. It doesn't help them. It does help us, though. So in that light, like, I could find problems with it, but it's really they're the only ones trying to even address the issue, you know, because we talk about, like, they want to deport kids, and they know, you know, we released leaked information, leaked documents, leaked intelligence report from the federal government, and I believe in that case it was from either the one we did from ICE or it was the one we did from Homeland Security as a whole. Possibly the one from the DEA, but we found out that 42% of all of the kids were actually 15 to 17 year old males, and these are males who say they're 15 to 17. We don't actually know that they're
right.
only 17, but they say it, and now they're going to be in our schools, but that's a whole other issue we can talk about. Our public schools, we have, by law, we have to provide that. But, you know, so when we look at this issue and we talk about the ability to make decisions and deport them immediately, I think that's very much needed. And I don't see anyone else proposing anything that would address the issue. I see a lot of leaders complaining, and I see a lot of leaders say we need to deport these kids immediately or we need to deport these minors immediately. But I don't see anyone really stepping up other than those guys and saying, hey, here's a plan to do it.
Right.
So that's where, you know, obviously if the guy's a Democrat, like Cuellar, like obviously I doubt there's very much he and I agree on, you know?
Sure, sure. Hey, I've got a question. I got a question here from a listener, Brandon, if we could. Jeffrey Swank writes and asks, has pot legalization influenced the shift of Mexican cartels moving from drugs to human trafficking?
100%. There's a report that came out. It came out in 2013, and it was a 2012 report from the Office of Drugs and Crimes of the United Nations. And it's a 60-some-odd, 80-page report. We published it at Breitbart. We wrote about it and did an analysis. And the report was very full of information. I think that if you want to find it, you can Google my name, Breitbart, and then Google Horn of Africa. And basically it was the UN saying that people were coming from the Horn of Africa and the Middle East, and they were coming through Central America. And they were then exploiting the same routes into the U.S. that the Central Americans and Mexicans used. But what was significant in that report, it didn't focus on it, but it talked a lot about it, was that as the profits from drugs decreased, they saw an increase in human smuggling and human trafficking, because these networks of criminals we now call cartels, their systems have been ingrained long before our drug war. You know, their systems and their relationships have been in place. They're making money, and they're gonna make money one way or another. People say our drug war is what makes them money. It's like, well, no. Like when we decrease their profits, like we did with Colorado and California, and increase the competition, they simply turn toward the sex trafficking of little girls. That's what they do, and the trafficking of children, and making sure that everyone who's semi-attractive on the way from Central America to the United States gets raped along the way, and every stop along the way. You know, this is what they do. So exactly, the less profit they make from narcotics, the more profit they're going to make from something else, and the easiest thing to make it from is human trafficking.
And so essentially what we're doing with our own policies right here in this country, for those that are, you know, so adamant that we need to legalize marijuana. Now, obviously, that's not the only thing, but one of the things that we are doing then is we're just changing. Well, this is the same thing that's happened. We watched the same thing happen with, you know, the mafias and the mobs and so forth over the years. As something changes within their environment, the relationships that they have, they just basically change the product and continue to use the same chains of supply.
Right, and it doesn't necessarily mean, I mean, there's these consequences. They might just be inevitable consequences. Look what happened without the prohibition of alcohol or without, you know, like there were sea changes, there were shifts, and they're hard to map and they're hard to deal with, but it doesn't necessarily mean in itself, like, hey, you decriminalized marijuana, so you're responsible for sex trafficking of children.
Right.
I don't think that's a fair statement,
right.
But I do think it's something we need to consider in the equation, that, you know, does it decrease the amount of people in our criminal justice system and the funds we're using? Yes, it does. But at the same time, it can run the risk of, you know, and I know this from firsthand experience, it is a lot easier when you know somebody is sex trafficking children. It is a hell of a lot easier to pull them over and bust them for the cocaine and the gun they have in their car to stop them than it is to bust them for sex trafficking of children. That's a complex, extensive investigation right there, or a series of investigations. Very complex, cost a ton of money, a ton of resources. You know, so we gotta consider. So it's like, well, if we're gonna take even this, if we're gonna take the tool of being able to bust people for narcotics away from investigators and law enforcement, then in order to stop sex trafficking and human trafficking, they're gonna have to then bust people for sex trafficking and human trafficking.
Right.
Which is going to cost probably 12 to 15 times more, and involve the need for 12 to 15 times more investigators. So you can't critique a police state and be against the drug war and be against human smuggling. You know, like there's consequences for all of this stuff. All of it
everything,
is very complex.
Sure. We're about out of time.
But all of it is complex.
Everything has tentacles. Brandon Darby, folks, Breitbart, Texas, Managing Director. When I come back, Michael Dozier joins me. He is with Project 21 Black Leadership Network. We're going to talk about Ferguson and what's happening in Ferguson, Missouri. You listen to The Chosen Generation, where no topic's off limits, everything filtered through biblical glasses.
A review of the week's events in Kerrville on Tune and Tweet, Saturday morning at 7:30 on Kerrville's original radio station, 1230 AM, KERV, Kerrville.
Fox News Radio, I'm Dave Anthony. They've stopped ceasing firing in Gaza. They have an expiring truce. Fox News Radio's Emily Wither live in Jerusalem.
6 hours before the latest truce was due to expire, the fighting has picked back up again. Three rockets were fired from Gaza into southern Israel, and the Israeli Defense Forces retaliated immediately with 7 airstrikes inside Gaza. It also prompted the Israeli negotiators to leave the Egyptian-mediated ceasefire talks in Cairo. They're now heading home, saying they won't negotiate under fire. No group has claimed responsibility for breaking the truce. Dave?
Emily, Ukrainian troops have taken back control of another town in the east held by pro-Russian rebels and fighting that's killed more than 2,000 people. Russia's been blamed for arming separatists, which it denies. President Putin will meet with his Ukrainian counterpart for talks next week. Peaceful protesters are being urged to...